Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2018 earnings call. Armando Tamez, Nemak CEO, Alberto Sada, CFO, and Adrian Althoff, Investor Relations Officer, are here this morning to discuss the company's performance and answer any questions that you may have. As a reminder, today's conference is being recorded and will be available on the company's investor relations website. I will now turn the call over to Adrian Althoff.
Thank you, operator. Good morning and welcome, everyone. We very much appreciate your participation. Armando Tamez, our CEO, will lead off today's call by providing an overview of business and financial highlights from 2018, as well as our outlook for 2019. Alberto Sada, our CFO, will then discuss our financial results in more detail. Afterwards, we'll open up for a Q&A session. Before we get started, let me remind you that information discussed on today's call may include forward-looking statements regarding the company's future financial performance and prospects, which are subject to risks and uncertainties. Actual results may differ materially, and the company cautions not to place undue reliance on these forward-looking statements. Nemak undertakes no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statements, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. I will now turn the call over to Armando Tamez.
Thank you, Adrian. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Nemak's fourth quarter 2018 conference call. I would like to begin with recent highlights in terms of the 2018 results and strategy execution before moving on to our 2019 guidance and related considerations going forward. During 2018, we made important inroads into value creation opportunities across our main business lines. We had a good year in our main markets, North America and Europe, successfully capitalizing on new product launches to drive improved results. In particular, we benefited from better-than-expected market demand in North America, which supported volumes, and a richer product mix in Europe, which was driven mainly by high-performance applications. Altogether, we surpassed our original guidance by a healthy margin. Regarding structural and electric vehicle components, we leveraged our dedicated organization to exceed customer expectations for quality and performance in product launches, growing revenues and enhancing our competitive position. For the full year, this segment contributed $150 million towards our top line, 50% more than in 2017. We also won contracts worth $280 million in annual revenues, bringing the value of our total order book for these parts to approximately $600 million annually, up more than 85% on a year-over-year basis. You may recall that we announced $50 million in new business in this segment at the Alfa Investor Day held last November. I am pleased to share that over the remainder of the period, we added $150 million on top of that amount, driven mainly by three contracts in e-mobility applications. One, to provide fully assembled battery housings for pure electric vehicles of a North American OEM. The other two, to use proprietary casting technology to produce highly integrated electric motor housings for pure electric applications of two premium European OEMs. Meanwhile, our sales and marketing efforts generated an increase in business leads, positioning us to add further to our sales backlog in the weeks and months ahead. Today, we are quoting opportunities in structural and electric vehicle components worth approximately $1.8 billion in annual revenues, nearly four times more than at the start of 2018. Taking into account awarded as well as potential business, we remain on track to meet our target of capturing $1 billion in annual revenues in this segment by 2022. Turning to our traditional propulsion business, we also saw a positive trend on the customer relationship side during the year, winning contracts in cylinder heads, engine blocks, and transmission housings worth a total of $490 million. The full year total for all product line was $770 million. We were successful in capturing incremental and replacement business alike in traditional propulsion applications, even though we saw OEM customers putting out less business to bid in this segment compared to previous years, in part a reflection of their stated interest in relocating investments toward electrification. We continue to deepen collaboration with customers at the early stages of product development, building on core technical competencies, including new alloys, casting design, component integration, rapid prototyping, thermal management, and crash testing, among others, to support innovation in lightweighting and electrification. This work reinforces our value proposition to customers, helping us to strengthen our foundation for long-term growth. In summary, last year, we broke new ground in tapping into customer demand for higher value-added solutions across propulsion and vehicle structure applications, which we have seen going hand-in-hand with their efforts to make mobility more energy efficient while meeting growing consumer demand for electrified offerings. I would now like to shift our focus to the present year, where we expect strategy execution to continue along the lines I just described. However, at the same time, we see a more challenging operating environment putting a temporary damper on our results. As you may have seen in our guidance announcement issued early this morning, we expect reductions in volume and revenues, as well as EBITDA. I would like to begin by providing additional context on the factors affecting these metrics. In 2019, we expect weaker performance in North America, while industry conditions may continue to hinder our results in Europe and China. Regarding North America, we see headwinds associated with a slowing industry cycle, as well as customer market share and product mix. In Europe, we see continued effects from, first, the phasing of a new emission testing regime known as WLTP. Second, lower sales of diesel vehicles versus gasoline. Third, Brexit. And fourth, trade disputes. We expect that the convergence of these factors will neutralize the upside potential we have been seeing from planned product launches in the region in 2019. Moving on to China, we may continue to be affected by production reductions at Ford and Jaguar Land Rover, which are in the process of refreshing their vehicle offering in the country. Given the time it is taking for these dynamics to play out in the market, we have adopted a more conservative outlook on our China business for 2019. I would like to emphasize that we are taking action to better position our organization to meet these temporary volume effects, expanding initiatives aimed at driving agility, cost reduction, efficiencies, and CapEx optimization. I also want you to know that we remain confident in our ability to execute on our medium and long-term plans, which position us to capitalize on a range of secular opportunities to deliver progressively stronger growth in subsequent years, based in part on our pipeline of scaled product launches over the next 12-18 months. We see good prospects for a partial recovery in consolidated volumes by 2020. Moreover, as we have explained in previous communications, we expect that the ramp-up of our structural and electric vehicle component business will kick into a higher gear within a similar time frame, particularly from 2021 onwards. With this, I conclude my remarks, and I will hand off the call to Alberto.
Thank you, Armando, and good morning, everyone. I will share some additional information on our performance during 2018 and expand on what Armando said regarding guidance for 2019. During the fourth quarter, we saw divergent industry trends in the regions where we operate. In North America, higher sales of SUVs and trucks nearly offset a reduction in passenger cars, while NEMA customer production held steady. We saw similar dynamics in the full year, where both light vehicle sales SAR and NEMA customer vehicle production finished in line with previous year's figures. In contrast, regarding Europe, we saw 10% and 5% reduction in light vehicle SAR
and NEMA customer production, respectively, mainly due to the impact of bottlenecks associated with the implementation of the WLTP emissions testing standards, which were extended to all new vehicle purchases in the region's largest economies, effective September 1st. For the full year, a strong first half almost compensated for the impact of the second half headwinds that I just described. In terms of vehicle mix, diesel share went from 42 to 35% during the year, with most of the decrease coming in the first half. The combination of diesel and WLTP-related effects accounted for most of the impact in NEMAC volumes for the full year. NEMAC's total sales volume in 2018 was 50 million equivalent units, basically equal to that of previous year, as increased volumes in North America offset a decrease in Europe and rest of the world. Consolidated volumes finished down in the fourth quarter, mainly due to the effects I just described in Europe, together with lower production from Ford in China. In turn, lower volumes caused revenues to decrease 1.5% in the period. However, for the full year, revenues finished up 5%, supported by the aluminum prices, as well as a better product mix. During the fourth quarter, we reported a consolidated operating income of $94 million. This is 42% higher than the year ago. This increase was mainly explained by reductions in depreciation and SG&A versus fourth quarter 17. Additionally, commercial settlements, efficiencies, and the capitalization of structural and EV components expenses contributed to the results, which more than offset lower volumes and higher energy prices. For the full year, operating income was 9.7% higher than 2017, supported by the product mix, plus the factors I just mentioned, which were specific for the fourth quarter. In turn, our EBITDA finished at $171 million, 3% above that of fourth quarter 17, reflecting higher operating income that I just described. EBITDA per equivalent unit was $14.9 compared to $13.8 a year ago. For the full year, EBITDA amounted to $734 million, an increase of 2.7% versus 2017, basically due to the operating income result that I just described. Regarding CapEx, we invested $403 million for the full year. We continue to focus our efforts in optimizing our CapEx and fulfilling customer requirements for new product launches. We maintain a strong financial condition, marking our 21st quarter in a row with a net debt to EBITDA ratio below the 2.0 times mark. This was supported by a healthy free cash flow generation that allowed us to pay $170 million in dividends while slightly reducing our net debt. Moving on to 2019, I would like to provide additional color on the assumptions behind our guidance. As Armando mentioned, most of the gap is explained by industry conditions which are affecting our volume outlook in our main markets. Regarding North America, we expect light vehicle sales to finish at 16.6 million units in 2019, which will represent a 4% decrease over last year. Additionally, we see several market risks. First, continued reduction in our customers' market share in North America, in particular Ford's passenger car segment. Second, engine downsizing, causing a dip in demand for some of our components. And third, a reduction in exports to China, where one of our customers is localizing productions that we're supplying from our operations in North America. Furthermore, our short-term growth outlook in Europe and China has been reduced in recent months, mainly due to a combination of the industry factors I already mentioned, together with recent market share loss among our customers Ford and Jaguar Land Rover. Taking into account one-time benefits in the fourth quarter worth $14 million, we're looking at a $100 million reduction in EBITDA for the full year, around 80% of which is related to volumes. The remainder breaks down just about equally between incremental costs associated with our structural and electric vehicle component business and higher energy prices, mainly in Europe. We're committed to further implementing initiatives focused on cost reductions and efficiencies with the aim of narrowing this gap. I want to emphasize that we're counting to exercise discipline in our capital allocation, reducing our investments by $80 million versus last year. We're targeting to maintain our net debt at the same levels as 2018 and to finish the year with a net debt to EBITDA ratio between 1.9 and 2.0 times.
and as a result, we expect that our shareholders will agree on a dividend payment commensurate with our free cash flow generation in the year. In terms of our results, I would like to emphasize that we see this year as a dip, followed by mid-single-digit volume recovery in 2020 on the back of planned product launches across our main business lines, and then driven mainly by a combination of won and potential business in structural and LV components in subsequent years. We're tapping into new growth opportunities in the business, focusing on investments that will help us to achieve our long-term goals. And with that, I conclude my comments and will now open the call for Q&A. Operator, please instruct the participants on how to place their questions.
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we pull for questions. Our first question comes from the line of Christian Landy with Scotiabank. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning, Armando, Alberto, and Adrian. I wanted to ask regarding the number that you mentioned, Armando, about the structural components and electric vehicles. You said that the contracts signed were $600 million plus 150 in additional contracts, if I understood correctly, bringing it to 750. Is it appropriate to consider that these will turn into annual revenue sales by 2020, considering that there's some development time that the new parts need to be considered into taken into account? Thank you.
Thank you, Christian, for the question. Just to clarify, the total amount that we have already contracted with customers is about $600 million. We are still positive in terms of reaching our target of $1 billion by 2022. Certainly, as I indicated in my presentation, we are seeing a significant number of new opportunities worth approximately $1.8 billion. We are looking out of those categories, which is divided between 50% electric and 50% structural parts, in looking to the most attractive and also looking to make business with the most reliable OEMs. And certainly, as we have indicated before, Christian, we are targeting a little bit better profitability, at least 2 percentage points higher than our current market. That is where we are targeting, and as I indicated, we are confident that we will reach this billion by 2022.
Okay. Thank you for the clarification.
Thanks.
As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. One moment, please, while we pull for questions. Our next question comes from the line of Jose Contreras with Zurich. Please proceed with your question.
Hi. Hello. Can you explain me this EBITDA, your EBITDA was impacted for two events, two one-off events. So can you explain me how much will be the EBITDA if we exclude this event?
Sure, Jose. Thanks for your question. Yes, as we highlighted in the quarter, we had certain positive and negative effects. In particular, we had two positive effects associated with a claim that we had received from a few customers in one particular region. And we had another one which had to do with the capitalization of vehicle structure expenses that we had expensed during the year, a portion of which were capitalized on the fourth quarter. So those two accounted for roughly about $14 million and those were positive effects reflected in the fourth quarter of 2017-18.
Okay, and I have another question. In rest of the world buildings, you say the building was down because you have some impact from China. And you said the performance in Brazil was not enough to compensate it. So can you tell me how relevant is China in the rest of the world?
Sure. The rest of the world is essentially half China and half South America. A little bit up and down depending on how the volumes develop, but it's about half and half.
Okay, and one more. I know these new contracts coming from electric vehicles. The client from what country is this client? I mean, is a China client, a United States client?
No, Jose. The contracts, especially the last three that we received, those are coming one for a full electric assembled battery housing that is going to be for an introduction of a customer in North America, customer that we have a very good relationship with, and they are planning to introduce few electric vehicles in the next few years. And the other two, we're very proud to say that we reached agreements with top German OEMs that have a very solid reputation, and they are planning to introduce these electric housings, which, by the way, we are using our proprietary technology and basically reuse. We're planning to reuse existing assets because those are very complicated parts that in the past we were using assets to produce engine blocks, and now using open capacity, we will take advantage of that and make these sophisticated, highly complex electric housings for the new electric vehicles for two premium German OEMs.
Okay. And the last one. Could you please give me a guidance about how much will be the EBITDA margin for this year?
Yes. Well, yeah. One second.
I mean, I want to know if the margin will be stable, or probably you have some impact related with some costs or stuff like that.
No. Yeah. The margin may be slightly affected because of these additional expenses in structural components and EV that I discussed, as well as a little bit more energy prices. We expect it to be in the range of 14% to 15%. In terms of EBITDA to sales.
Okay. Our next question comes from the line of Alejandro Acar with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for taking my questions, and good morning. If I may have several ones. First one is if you could tell us the magnitude of the impact on the energy prices during the fourth quarter, and how is this going to affect your operations during 2019? And the other one is you mentioned your expectations for the market decline in NAFTA of about 4%, if you can comment the same on Europe and China, and if you could break down the $600 million backlog in structural and electric vehicle components, if you could break down that number. Please.
Sure. Yes, absolutely, Alejandro. Related to your first question on energy, the effect on the fourth quarter was roughly about between $5 and $6 million. That was mainly in operations in North America. Our operations in North America, we are expecting to reverse that or recover that effect, so we don't see energy effects in North America, but we'll see potentially energy effects in Europe in a similar magnitude. So it's going to be potentially a one-digit effect for the full year. Yeah.
Let me just move, Alejandro, to your third question, which was related to the market. How do we see? We are seeing, actually, Europe, in spite of all this turmoil that Europe is facing, at the same size, approximately about 20.2 million units. And in China, also, based on the analyst that we are following, we're also expecting that China will have the same size of the vehicle sales for this year at about 27.5 million units. And so, your last question related to the breakdown, out of these $600 million worth of contracts, we have approximately 50-50 between structural and electric vehicle components.
And you mentioned that the biddings, the 1.8 billion, were the same, right? 50-50%.
Actually, it's a little bit higher on the electric side. We are seeing, Alejandro, significantly more opportunities on the electric side. And proud to say that we have been taking a significant market share in North America and Europe based on our technology, in our footprint, and the progress that we have been making over the last 4 years. So we are, to some extent, optimistic that we will continue gaining new contracts and new orders. And I would say about two-thirds are on the electric side and about one-third in the structural component business.
Okay, wonderful. And one more, if I may, Armando. Regarding your expectations on Europe and China, so the main effect on the guidance of 8% decline would be market share loss from Ford and from Land Rover, right? Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct, yes.
Okay, and another one, if I may.
You may.
So you gave a guidance on the Alpha Day of 915 million in EBITDA by 2021. Are you still feeling that you can achieve that with the ramp up of structural and electric vehicle components, or you'll be revising that number?
Alejandro, certainly we will be reviewing these numbers based on recent changes in the global economy and all the factors that we just mentioned, such as Brexit, the change on the diesel, this WLTP, and all these economic factors plus trade wars and so on. But we will be updating our numbers, and certainly we will be more than willing to share those with you and the rest of the people that are following our company. At a later time, we will announce when we will be able to share these revised numbers.
Perfect. And one for Alberto. Your expectation for sales from structural and electric vehicle components in 2019 would be around 200-250, or versus what amount in 2018?
Yeah, it will be short to 200, about a little bit less than 200.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for let me have the question.
Thank you, Alejandro.
Our next question comes from the line of Augusto Enciki with HSBC Global Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thanks for taking the question. I just wanted to clarify, you guys said the structural components and EV segment was about $150 million revenue. Was that right, $150 million revenue for 2018?
Yes. For 2018 and roughly $200 million for 2019.
Okay. Could you tell us how much it contributes at the EBITDA level?
Well, at this point, I mean, it's in the ramp-up phase, so the contribution of it is still not at the level that we will expect when it's in full deployment. Right now, it's about average with the rest of business, minus all these expenses that we're taking care for staffing and building the organization. These costs are associated with our ability to gain new business and will be fully offset once we reach the expected levels on this segment. So for now, it's around average, a little bit less.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And so when you say the ramp up is, was already said the ramp up will accelerate 2020 onwards?
Yes.
Okay. So for 2019, then, how much of are the ramp up costs that are in your EBITDA guidance here?
Well, we're assuming similar levels of launching expenses that we have had in this year. But those obviously can be up and down depending on how some of the launches develop. We don't expect any unusual higher launching expenses, but something aligned with what we had experienced this year, potentially less.
Okay. And so how much was it total in these launch expenses or launch-related expenses in 2018?
Well, the launching expenses in 2018 should have been less than, around $24 million. Just to clarify, Augusto, that's the expense that we are incurring in the structural and EVs. Is that your question, or you want to know?
Yes. And so then you're saying this amount will carry over into 2019.
Yeah, structural and EVs will increase a little bit in 2019 from that 24 that we had. For the sake of gaining new business.
Yeah. Augusto, just to complement what Alberto is mentioning, as we indicated about 18 months ago, we decided to have a dedicated organization focusing on structural and electric vehicle components. That organization is reporting directly to me, and it's proven already. Yes, we are investing in this organization, but at the same time, we have been able to win significant contracts with top OEMs, and we're very happy with the results so far that the team is bringing to the company.
Mm-hmm. And thank you for that. That's helpful. So just one additional question, and sorry if I missed this. Could you give an explanation on what was the rationale for the higher taxes? I think the effective rate was quite high in the quarter. Is it something that we will be ongoing, or looking forward, can we assume something closer to 30%?
Yeah, going forward, we should assume on an annual basis to have a similar level as what we had in 2018. When you see the quarterly tax level, that gets affected by a number of factors. I mean, it could be affected on one side. Deferred taxes could be higher or lower given exchange rate fluctuations and the effect of the functional currency, as well as some accruals that we normally do during the year that could be higher or lower than what the end of the year will take. In this particular case, in 2018, it was higher than usual when you compare that also with last year. And it was a combination of two opposite effects. Last year, we had over-accrued a little bit at our operations in North America for the taxes in earlier quarters, which called for a reduction for the level reported in the fourth quarter in 2017. And in 2018, it was the other way. It was underestimated during the year, and it was then catched up in 2018 with additional provisions for taxes. So, but all in all, I think on a yearly basis, we should expect a similar level of taxes as what we saw in 2018 going forward.
So then an effective rate around 40%?
No, it should be more in the high 20s for the full year percent.
Okay. I'll go back to that. Okay, cool. Thank you very much for that. That's very helpful. I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Jose Vasquez with GBM. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. I just want a quick follow-up on the EBITDA level. We see the 8% EBITDA per unit increase. Is it related only to the the commercial settlement and the one of that you received this quarter, or are there any, or the breakdown on between those things and the efficiencies gains that impacted positively the EBITDA per equivalent unit? Thank you.
Jose, you're referring to the quarter or the full year?
For the quarter. Yeah.
Yes. No. Yeah. It was a combination of several factors. On one side, this extraordinary effects, but we also had very good performance in Europe, driven by efficiencies and mix. So it was both a combination of these extraordinary effects plus better performance than expected in Europe, and a little bit of FX. But it's a combination of these factors.
Okay. This good sales mix and the good performance in Europe this quarter is expected to continue through 2019, or it will be diminishing by all the things that you've mentioned before?
Yeah, well, it will be Europe will be stable versus last year, given the volume development, but we continue focusing our efforts on performance, so we expect some performance improvement as well happening there, and a little bit more of mixed benefits as we launch further structural components and EVs in the region. Remember that the big portion of this business is focused on Europe, so we expect that to be gradually contributing more as we gain scale on that segment.
Which level would you say would be a good equivalent reference for Europe? Between 16 and 17 per equivalent unit?
Yes.
Okay,
around,
perfect. Thank you very much.
More around the 16.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from the line of Mauricio Serna with UBS. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my questions. First thing, sorry if you already mentioned this, but I wanted to know if you could provide maybe a little breakdown on that 8% decline of total volumes expectations for this year. You know, any particular region that will be experiencing or driving that decline, be very helpful to know. Also, when you look at the EBITDA per head expectation, it implies a 9% decline year over year, if I'm not mistaken. Just want to know if that has to do more with a mix effect, or is it something, is a particular region going to struggle given the volume outlook this year? And finally, just wanted to make sure, you were mentioning $200 million of sales from the new business lines for this year, and assuming then margins relatively similar to the entire business at the moment, and out of that, you need to also take out the ramp-up costs. So just if we're trying to estimate, you know, how much of an EBITDA contribution these businesses will have to NEMAC. Thank you.
Yeah, sure, Mauricio. Related to your first question on volume, most of the effect that we are seeing for 2019 is associated with performance in North America, volume performance. And there you see a combination, as we described on the call, combination of several factors. One of them is the industry being reduced. Our expectation for North America is for that industry to drop from 17.3 to 16.6 million vehicles. On the other side, we also have a few of our customers unfortunately losing share associated with changes or not being able to fulfill the change between passenger cars and SUVs and pickup trucks, as well as a relatively high number for one of our customers in 2018 that we don't anticipate repeating in 2019. And last but not least, we're seeing less exports of volumes that we were producing in North America for China, where one particular OEM is phasing out a few products and localizing them in China. So the majority of the negative effects come from North America, given these three major factors. And I think it's also important to say that for Europe, we had originally anticipated higher growth, as was indicated by Armando, but unfortunately, these external effects is damping the growth that we're expecting. So for that reason, it would be fairly stable, but some risk in Asia, as was discussed. And related to your second question on EBITDA, you're seeing a slightly higher EBITDA drop than what is explained by volume, and that's associated with the two factors I described, a little bit higher energy prices, as well as additional expenses on the structural components and EVs as we are let's say, fulfilling our organization and our expenses associated with our ability to capture and enter this new business. So having said that, the margin for structural components and EVs for 2019 would not be representative of what we're looking for at the end of the year, at the end of the, let's say, of achieving the full rate of sales. And right now we're seeing that the margins, absent of the additional expenses for staffing that whole organization, is slightly higher than the average on the powertrain. But if you subtract, obviously, the effect of this incremental cost of this new organization, it will be less than average.
Okay. Got it. So I guess you will be probably seeing, per your guidance, a double-digit decline in North America volumes this year.
Yes. Around, probably very high single digits.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Guilherme Mendes with J.P. Morgan. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my question. Just actually a follow-up here regarding capitalization of $6 million related to the EV and structural component segment. Just wanted to understand if we should see a similar trend in the next quarters. If you could provide a little bit more color in terms of the rationale behind this capitalization.
Yes, sure. This is capitalization of expenses that took place in the entire year. So it was a one-quarter adjustment of expenses that were carried on during the year. So we expect this to remain at the same level. So next year it will be $6 million, probably one and a half more, but associated with those expenses that we increase in structural that are associated with development of a specific project that will be amortized in the life of those projects in the future. But this is a full year effect. So next year we won't see this happening on the last quarter, but rather on a quarter-by-quarter basis for an amount which is going to be one-fourth of what you're seeing here on a quarterly basis.
Our next question comes from the line of Luis Miranda with Santander Bank. Please proceed with your question.
Yes. Hi, Armando, Alberto. Good morning. Just follow-up questions on the backlog. I want to understand, Armando, it seems that finally you're starting to see a ramp-up in the build-up of the backlog with close to $200 million in the fourth quarter. I wanted to understand, and considering that the CapEx adjustment you're mentioning for 2019, you might not be requiring any investment in this business line in 2019. Is that correct? And also, can you give us an update on the capacity utilization for North America and Europe? Thank you.
Yes. Yeah, Luis, thanks for the question. What we are seeing on the electric and structural vehicle component is that we require less CapEx on average than for heads and blocks or transmission housings. Our estimate, for instance, if we were to go for a greenfield facility, it would be approximately 80% of what we are investing for heads, blocks, and transmission housing. So it's less intensive in capital, which I think is good news for us. Having said that, Luis, as I indicated previously, we are trying to use open capacity in some of the products that we are today quoting. That's our main focus, to try to reuse existing assets to be more efficient and certainly improve our return on invested capital. And certainly we expect that we will continue, again, investing, but not at the same level as we have been over the last few years on the powertrain side. I think it's important also to mention and to give you a little bit more clarity. based on the comments that I made, that we are seeing from our customers less requests to bid powertrain components. They are extending the life, which I think is also positive for both our customers and ourselves. We don't need to go to continue investing at the same rate that we were over the last few years. And as we have shown and Alberto presented already, we have been able to reduce our CapEx. Remember, just a couple of years ago, we were at the 500-plus level. Now, this year, we're expecting to be at the 320 level.
Perfect. Thank you, Armando. And just on the capacity utilization rate in North America and Europe, could you give us some color, please?
Yes. The capacity, sorry, Luis. The capacity utilization today that we have in North America is at approximately about 80%, so we have still some opportunities to get additional, let's say, business without huge investments. In Europe, it's about 75%. As we indicated, we were planning, actually, as we speak, to have significantly higher volume. We made some investments in Europe that, unfortunately, due to the Brexit, the new WLTP, some other issues, trade wars, and so on. Today, Europe is running at about 75%, and we will look how we can fill this open capacity, as well as we will continue with some claims that we have with some outstanding claims that we have with some customers in that region. And in addition, also in North America, as well as in Asia, for underutilized assets that were significantly below our contracted volumes.
Perfect. That was clear. Thanks, Armand.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from the line of Vanessa Quiroga with Credit Suisse. Please proceed with your question.
Thank you. My question is regarding just on more detail regarding Europe. So to understand more clearly the outlook for EBITDA, if I understood correctly, you are expecting stable volumes for Europe, and you said that $16 per unit is reasonable in terms of EBITDA, but then energy costs will mostly affect that region. Is that correct? So exactly what are you expecting in terms of profitability for Europe in 2019 compared to 2018?
Yes. I mean, if you see the development of our EBITDA per unit in Europe, it has been going up consistently every single year, Vanessa. And back in 2017, Europe was at about $14.50 per equivalent unit. This year, we had this extraordinary effect of this incremental gain out of the claims that we received from some customers, as well as we also got a little bit of tailwind from FX, the translation effects of the euro versus the dollar. In 2019, we see, let's say, absence of this extraordinary effect, and depending on how the exchange rate would look, we'll see around the 16 dollars per piece, or a little bit higher. So that's the run rate we're seeing, net of all the effects of energy costs, as well as incremental structural and EV costs that we are heavily doing in Europe, as well as the relatively stable volume perspective that we're seeing for Europe.
Okay. Understood. And so just to clarify then on that consolidated guidance of EBITDA, it includes about $18 million of positive effects from capitalization, correct? That did not happen in 2018.
No, in 2018 we have $18 million worth of extraordinary effects. The two were the capitalization of expenses as well as this commercial settlement that we described. So that's, let's say, that's a non-recurrence. So we are not accounting for those things. The only one that will be carryover will be the vehicle structural capitalization that we expect to be in the same level in 2019. It's slightly a little bit higher, but all in all, it's a high single digit.
Ah, okay, great. That's clear. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Our next question comes from the line of Rodolfo Ramos with Bradesco BBI. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you for taking my question. My question is a follow-up on your expectations for declines in volumes in North America, and more specifically into the portion of overall industry, not so much your loss of or your customers' loss of market share. And how are your conversations or your feeling? I don't know if you can give it more color into how is the industry looking at the fact that the industry is operating under very low levels of inventories compared to sales, probably dating back to 2011 and 2012. So I don't know how are your conversations in regards to this factor and if you can tie up to that expectation of lower volume sales. Thank you.
Yes, certainly, Rodolfo. I just want to clarify how we build up our numbers going forward. I mean, the implicit industry assumption is our calculation of what we receive as individual call-offs per platforms, per vehicle, per customer. So our numbers incorporate what our customers are forecasting to be their take needs. And they take into consideration when they forecast their engine productions, their needs of either increasing or decreasing inventory, plus any potential shift in products, or in this case, as we're seeing, unfortunately, some of them losing share or reducing their volumes versus 18. So it's a mix of all that, and that those are ongoing discussions. Whenever we see that there is issues in particular platforms where volumes are not performing, as Armando highlighted, we come closer to them to understand if this is permanent or temporary effects, and look for corresponding adjustments, either pricing or settlement. So, but all in all, the expectations that we get from our customers are incorporated in this guidance, and it includes all those effects of inventories as well as their production schedules in general.
Let me just add to Alberto's comment, Rodolfo, that over the last 5 years, we made an analysis about our projection of short-term volumes, and that by short-term, I mean 1 year. We have a deviation over the last 5 years of less than 1% in total. So I think our planning team is very accurate in predicting to some extent, following what Alberto is mentioning, some of the analysts that we are following, as well as a close relationship with customers to understand the need for volumes.
That's very helpful. So for 2020, you could expect more changes in either direction, just based on what has happened in the past.
Yes, as I indicated, Rodolfo, we're expecting some recovery in 2020 because we are seeing some effects today, especially in Europe, where we're expecting that the volume will increase over the next 18 months. We have a lot of issues, we are facing a lot of issues today in Europe. And certainly, taking advantage of open capacity, we are looking for additional opportunities in North America, how we can fill with profitable products, some of our plans that we have, let's say, with open capacity.
Thank you. Very useful.
Thanks.
Our next question is a follow-up from Augusto Ensiki with HSBC Global Asset Management. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, I'm sorry. Actually, my question was answered. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
There are no further questions at this time, and I'd like to turn the conference back over to Mr. Althoff for any additional or concluding remarks. Sir?
Thank you, operator. I would just like to thank everyone for participating in today's call. Please feel free to contact us if you have any follow-up questions or comments. Have a good day.
This concludes today's conference. You may disconnect your lines at this time. Thank you for your participation.